start with the question of Pariyatti. I listen some discussion about Pariyatti, but I still don't understand. As I know, Paribhati experience directly the characteristic of reality. But for Pariyatti, as I know, there are many levels of Panya. At that level, what is the object of Pariyatti? When?
What about if you don't call it Pariyatti? Understanding is the most important. Because from eons and eons ago, no understanding of reality at all. If there's no word of the Buddha at all. I think that we think about patipatti, we think about direct understanding, we think about satipatthana, but it's only not the understanding that it has to be now. But since right understanding is not enough, this is the point, not enough to condition direct understanding. So with doubt about the sati, sampajanya, and so on, and vipassanayana, but the point is that no understanding enough. Because we just heard about seeing now arises and falls away, and it's so true, no one can argue against it. But it's a panya which just begin to hear about this while now no one there. Seeing, if seeing does not arise, there's no that which is seen at all, as anything. Just understand only that, and leave it to panya, or right understanding, develops from hearing again and again, and consider again and again, and it's just like now, who knows when realities do not appear to panya of that degree. Like now, hardness is here, no understanding. If one tries very, very hard to understand it, it's wrong, because the self cannot have such understanding. But the gradual understanding from hearing, considering, develops. So we understand what's meant by Sankhara Khanda. We begin to understand what is said in Tipitaka from this moment. Citta cetasikas do not appear, but they arise and fall away, perform their functions. No one can do that. Hearing just here, and thinking after that, and understanding develops little by little. We don't have to call it Pariyatti, but as long as it's not the direct understanding of only a reality, which now appears, everything arises and falls away in split seconds. So they cannot appear as different realities, citta and cetasikas, because panya is not enough. For example, sound. Sound is sound, hearing is hearing, no one there. See, after that, there's beginning from sanya, memory, that is the sound of what? Birds or what, see? It develops from hearing, considering. It's like holding that knife's handle. Who knows, each moment of holding it, it just gets less and less hard until it appears as, oh, it's worn out, little by little. But at the moment when it is worn out, no one knows, like now. This is the way to eradicate the very, very strong idea of self from eons and eons ago. So it's just like this. If you try to understand whatever appears, it's you. When it's time, right understanding is there with sati. So that sati is sati and sampajanya or satipatthana with understanding. It is not useful at all if there is only sati without right understanding. It's like moment of giving dana and observing sila, or any moment of kusala, listening to Dhamma, understanding. Not any reality appear yet. Until it's time, only it's time. They develop now, little by little, gradually, unknowingly, all the time. That's why everything must be so very natural. Very, very natural. even right now, each move, each moment, each thinking, each hearing, natural seeing. No panya, and listen until panya is there.
Will understanding if we developed unknowingly.
Certainly.
But the characteristic of, but the function of panya is knowing.
For example, seeing arises and falls away now, unknowingly. Unknown, right now, see? And there are seven jetasikas, unknown, arising with citta. That's why Buddha taught the details of each moment in order to develop panya. Otherwise, nothing will do. Understanding, little by little. As long as there's no understanding, seeing right now, naturally, by conditions, it has to be like this from eons and eons until time comes. Like Bodhisattva. Took quite a long, long time just to know the arising and falling away of whatever now does not appear as a reality. Different ones. Just listen.
No need to label whether it's a understanding, whether it's a pariyatti or understanding.
That's why
or
there
not,
must be confidence of each word. For example, Dhamma. No confidence yet, not confident enough. Dhamma means not I, not anyone, no body in it.
Understand now? Would you like to be aware now?
It arises by condition, by its own condition.
That's right. So if one would like to, or one is concerned to have pariyatti, and is it pariyatti now? This is not pariyatti, this is not understanding. So by hearing and understanding about different realities, like we talked about visible object this morning, or seeing now, this is a way that gradually understanding will develop naturally. But if one is concerned or anxious to have understanding now, or for it to be pariyatti, or to work out is it pariyatti now or not, or to recognize this chetasika now, this is not pariyatti, because it's clinging, attachment behind it. So this is what is meant by it has to be very natural, by hearing and considering about different dharmas. Understanding will develop, no matter what one calls it, but not by trying to understand, trying to be aware, trying to recognize different mental factors that arise, because that's all clinging for oneself.
Understanding can condition, can lead to the experiencing of, can condition the arising of understanding, of direct understanding, is pariyatti.
Understanding, there's no thought about when will it be direct understanding, or how can it lead, or like Ajahn said, it's just the gradual wearing away of the knife handle. It just is understanding and it develops, but no thought about what about tomorrow, or what about how little or how much, or when will it be this. Just let it develop naturally, not worrying about how much, how little, when will it be this, when will it be that. Because the impatient and the desire for results is a big hindrance to the development of understanding.
No, whether the when the understanding arises, whether it know it's right, it's not a wrong way. Because sometimes
right understanding, it knows, it understands, it knows what is right. But when it's wrong understanding, the nature of wrong understanding is to think it's right, even though it's not. So this is why there has to be a lot of hearing and considering and truthfulness, Satchaparami, to really understand and be truthful to what is correct and true. So at the moment of trying to know or trying to work it out, then this is not the right understanding, this is wrong understanding.
Can you talk a little bit more about the right understanding?
Now, what is seeing now?
See the visible object.
Is it right or is it wrong?
It's right.
And what sees it?
What is it? It's nama.
Yeah, and what is the characteristic of the reality that experiences the visible object?
Just on still the concept, and the visible object itself is rupa.
Mm-hmm. And what sees the rupa, the visible object?
Seeing nama.
Yeah. And any doubt that it's seeing that sees? Is it just repeating the word? Or is there really understanding and confidence that it cannot be anything else? Hearing cannot see, thinking cannot see, yeah. A self cannot see.
It's still the in the concept, but confident about
confident.
That concept.
Okay, so it's the understand. So this is understanding. So this is pariyati, when it's clear that it's just seeing which sees at this moment. And at the moment of understanding, seeing, even though it's just at this level, even though it's at conceptual level, but no thought about when will it grow and what about it's too little and what about next moment and what about the mental factors, because at that moment it just understands at the beginning level that it's just seeing which sees. And this is how understanding develops. And a moment of thinking, it doesn't matter what it thinks about. It can think about the dream last night or the mosquito bite or anything, but it's just thinking, just that Dhamma. So when there's understanding, there's confidence at that moment that that is life, nothing else at all, just the moment of thinking. No concern about how basic or beginner level or anything, it's just that reality. So this is understanding and this is how it grows. So that's why there has to be the hearing again and again about realities appearing now. Like however much one learns about the details of heart base and where it arises, it won't actually help the development of understanding now, just to know that there are different dharmas that arise by conditions for more confidence that all dharmas are anatta. But back to this moment, this thinking now, this worry now, why so much or so little, even that is dharma. Doubt now, thinking, hardness, hearing, not by trying to catch, but just because it's clear that is the nature of life now. And the hearing now or the seeing now, can science help one to understand anything about seeing now? So it can never, however, even if one is an Einstein, it can never, even with that kind of knowledge, it can never ever help the development of understanding and the development of confidence that it's just seeing that sees now.
I just answer.
Just a sentence. So it appears like a strong confidence.
Understanding is only concerned with what is at the present moment, not with why or how or anything else about the present moment, just the nature of something appearing at the present moment.
About the present moment, it's really, I think it's difficult.
Well, I didn't. I didn't say it's concerned with the present moment, because that's a concept. I said it's concerned with something that's appearing at the present moment. There are things appearing now, and we've heard about what they are or what they might be, and we know that it doesn't include tree or van or table, but we know that it concerns seeing and visible object, or hearing and sound, hardness or softness, through the body sense or thinking, that sort of thing. So it's a combination of considering what's been heard and understanding that it's just the nature of that present moment experiencing or what is experienced. That is the object, nothing else.
Sure, everything need to be considered back to the present moment or just the paper word, just the word to be consideration at now.
So confidence or doubt now, doubt whether it's right, whether it's pariyatti, whether it's development of understanding, or is it, or at a moment of understanding, seeing now, at that moment, no doubt, no, because it's understanding. When it's doubt, cannot be understanding.
So when the right understanding it arises, to understand some kind of object, whatever object, understand itself, it understand what it really is, right? No one there. So we don't need to capture, hey, you know, whether I haven't been understand it or not, or something like that.
Understanding is very weak when it first arises in this lifetime. It can be imperceptible. It may not be so strong that it is very apparent, but as Ajahn said, over time, just like the handle of the carpenter's tool, the wearing away is not apparent on each occasion that he takes hold of it, but only after a time. You can see the finger mark imprints in the handle. And so it is with understanding, that it isn't necessarily apparent every time it arises, but over time there is a better understanding of the nature of the present moment, of some reality of the present moment. So before we heard the Dhamma, we thought the world was just a composite of all the different experiences. And we understand that that's living in a world of concepts. But after a while of hearing the Dhamma and considering what we've heard, then we get a bit better idea that there are the different worlds of seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching and thinking, and how different they are, and how there are just those realities, those different experiencings and their objects. So if there is a better understanding of that, then it means that understanding has been arising, even though we may not have been aware every occasion that it arose. And sometimes when we've heard about, say, seeing an invisible object, there can be a glimmer of appreciation that what is seen at the present moment are not people and things, but just that visible data that is then the subject of thinking and so forth. So no need to be too concerned about, oh, I don't think I've had so many moments of understanding, or it's not very apparent, or things like that, because it naturally has to be very weak at the beginning. And everyone wants to know when it's right understanding and when it's not.
When it comes.
And it knows.
By conditions only.
And when it develops, less and less thought about how much, how little, when, or in the future, or anything like that. No waste of time to think like that. Is it pariyatti or isn't it, or when will it? It's useless thinking.
Even with sati or some other, let's say, just with calmness as well. When it arises, it should arise. We don't need to capture the moment to.
And it's gone already. So it's gone. A moment ago, was any understanding there or not? It's gone. Impossible to know now because it's already gone. So at a moment of understanding, it understands the object and awareness is aware, but it's gone. So afterwards, thinking about it and wondering, It's but just thinking with doubt. And akusala cheetahs.
But let's say, do we need to learn about the characteristic of that? If, let's say, someone that don't know anything about sati or calmness, something like that, but they do any condition that they understand arise and kept and understand whatever just arise with sati or calmness, they can experience the characteristic of that, not labeling at the sati or calmness, but
yeah, you talk about yourself. Shall we not talk about sati yet? Just think how much understanding is there now of that which appears. To really know that, it's impossible to talk about the higher level of understanding, because even right now, right understanding should know correctly that how much understanding is there of seeing right now. Just in order to forget about trying to have sati with sampajanya, just to experience it, because right understanding of realities is not enough yet. So the more we hear, the more panya is there, and then right understanding knows how much understanding begins, develops just a little at a time. At moment of hearing, everyone understands, but after that, it's gone completely. So not enough, just listen, and listen carefully, and have confidence in each word as it is, like Dhamma is Dhamma, not I, not anything at all. For example now, what is behind the scene which appears, what is behind it?
There
is seeing right now, and seeing is that which is seen. See, just this word. Seeing is that which is seen now. What is behind that which is seen? Is there anything?
No.
Really?
Behind the seeing.
Behind the scene.
The scene now. What's behind the scene?
Seeing here, right? You're talking
that which
behind.
Is seen, that which is seen. What's it's behind? Because the idea of people and things covers up.
Behind the scene.
Yes. And what about that which is seen?
That which is seen is also reality.
So what is behind it?
Behind
that which is seen.
Reality.
What reality?
That which is seen is rupa.
We just talk about two words, rupa and nama. But why not mention each one as it is to understand that it's rupa? Not just name it rupa. What's there behind?
The visible object.
Behind visible object. Because that visible object appears, is there anything behind?
Ignorance.
That is not rupa. See, we don't talk just about other things, but clarify what we haven't thought about before, to know it a little more, until it conditioned the right awareness. With right understanding, not just right understanding, not right awareness itself, because that cannot be right awareness. It seems like there it is, but when panya is not enough, it's just the moment of experiencing that which appears as usual. But there is the idea of something from hearing. So there must be difference between each very, very, very wise understanding. So, see, it's what you have heard before, but not thinking about it at all.
Achan asking But behind the seeing, or just
the
after
scene, the seeing now,
the seeing, what we
the seeing, the seeing now, which is an object now, the seeing behind it.
Why do you take
the darkness?
That is not what you learned. That is not what you learned. The answer you have learned before, but you didn't think about it. That's why keep on not understanding that which is seen. A little bit of understanding this or that here and there will develop understanding of no self, little by little. So the understanding is very important, not thinking about other things like sati and panya and vipassana and so on. To be truthful, what about the understanding of whatever appears? You just call it, name it, read it, until it develops little by little. So discussion is mangala because it brings about understanding about what has been learnt, to understand better and better, deeper and deeper. Is there anything behind the scene?
It's a rupa.
What rupa?
No, behind the scene there is no visible object.
I think Jet eight rupa.
I think Achan's got us here.
Okay. I think it behind the scene, behind what we've seen here, right?
Behind the physical object. What you said a minute ago.
There is rupa, but. Is the eyes base, rupa?
I think the eight, at least eight inseparable.
The four primary rupas.
The four primary rupas.
The
idea of green or blue or this person or that person, because the sign of each visible object is different, and like we discussed this morning, why is it different? Because behind it, supporting it, have to be at least seven other rupas.
Just so to begin to understand that what we take very important is just that.
Otherwise,
which is hard.
There's always the idea of seeing something or someone, but actually it's just different visible objects. Each moment it's different. Why? Because like we discussed, because it's conditioned or influenced by the other rupas behind the scenes, working together with it, supporting it.
It will bring about detachment little at a time, very little, to know more, understand more, but actually there's nothing but that which is the rupa, the four primary, and the others, and that which experience. And in a day, we forget all the time. We like the table, we touch it, we see it, the flowers here, see? But what is there? Only thinking about that which can impinge on the eyes, while that which is behind cannot impinge on the eye. So much ignorance about everything. And we hear just a little bit of this and that. But thinking and understanding that actually there's no one at all, no matter at what time. Hearing, seeing, thinking. And learning to understand different characteristics will condition sammasati and sampajanya because of understanding enough. Otherwise, it's the self, like just a moment ago. You ask about many things, just wanting to know. But what is behind the scene? This, that which is seen is rupa. So what is behind? It's for primary rupas. In order to understand why they are the four primary rupas. Without that, nothing can appear, no matter sound, smell, taste, whatever.
Four primary rupa generate every kind of rupa, right? I mean,
what's the meaning of the four primary rupas?
A character.
Without these rupas, the other rupa cannot arise at all. The main rupa. We like the body very much. We cling to it very much. And then one day, it's the understanding. It's just that which appears. Little by little, gradually, it takes time by itself, developing. It's not, I shall do this, I must do that in order to have sati and try to catch it. All done by the wrong understanding of self.
Then you have just said, listen carefully. What is listen carefully?
Now, about behind the scene.
Listen carefully means don't do anything. No one there, no one who can do anything, but consider what is said. This is the understanding. Not try to listen or try to catch or try to be aware. That's the opposite of listen carefully. So it means consider what is meant by each reality, like primary rupas or any other, when one hears about it, but not do anything. Like when we were in Bangkok, Hung made a comment about how fortunate some Thai friends were who could come every week or listen so much or listen more and more. But I said, I never think like that. I never think, oh, I wish I could listen more, or I wish I could be living in Thailand or something like that, because that is not listening carefully, thinking that if one just is attending every Saturday or one reads more books, there will be more understanding. That's not what is meant by listen carefully. Listen carefully means considering what is life now, what is real now, letting understanding develop naturally, appreciating that each Dharma is anatta, no matter where or what, or working in Vietnam or living here or there. It's just seeing, just hearing, just different rupas arising dependent on those primary rupas, just the same anywhere. So it's not about how much time one is listening or anything like that, because that's just conventional ideas. So it's always back to this moment.
So may I ask about the behind the scene for the Namma?
See, you would like to know.
Okay.
Not careful study.
Okay.
And this is the wrong way to study Dhamma, it said. For the Vinaya, if you study wrongly, then you will break the precepts. For the Sutta, if you do not understand carefully, then there will be the idea of self, do this and that just to eliminate ignorance. That's wrong. And for Abhidhamma, think a lot about other things. Yeah.
Thinking too much. trying to collect all the details.
Or trying to memorize a number, or trying to remember what arises with what, and trying to know the intricacy of karma, or the, collect all these details. This is the catching the snake the wrong way, and it just leads to madness, not to understanding. So this is not listening carefully. So this is why we wouldn't, or Ajahn would never teach the Dharma by having everyone try to memorize how many chetasikas arise with each chitta, because it's just book knowledge, it's not listening carefully.
What's behind the smell?
It's still for primary rupa plus, yeah.
Now one knows a little better. See? And this will condition no self, no one, little by little.
I smell the four primary rupas and what other rupas also?
At least eight inseparable.
Inseparable. Rupa.
And
including the odor.
Yeah, odor.
Smell, yes.
Smell, right, okay.
So what are the eight? What are the other seven ones?
The seven one.
What are the others? So the four primary rupas?
Four primary rupa and color, mui lagi, tingin lagi. Odor, taste, nutrition.
Okay, and what is the difference between color and visible object? We've just talked about what is seen or the visible object. What is the difference between color and visible object?
Different about color and visible object.
One of the eight indivisible rupas, and we've been talking about visible objects. So, what is the difference?
I think color is the imping to the eye and can be experiencing that rupas more. It primarily it's eight, but the color is more. I think that characteristic is much stronger than others and can be experiencing by imping to the eye sense.
So when visible object is seen, like out here, the visible object that's conditioned by temperature, behind the scenes or behind it, there are the four primary rupas, and what other rupas?
The color. The forest.
So you mean that the visible object behind it are four primary rupas plus odor, nutriment,
it also has,
and color as well as visible object?
Color is a visible object.
Right. So when we talk about color, when you mentioned that color is one of the rupas in each kalapa, one of the indivisible rupas, what's the difference between color and visible object that is seen?
No. Could you repeat your question?
Because now we're talking about visible object that's seen, but when I asked what are the rupas that arise together with odor or visible object, you mentioned color. So why are you mentioning color there and not visible object?
No, it's just that actually color is a visible object, the characteristic of visible object.
It's just what is seen. Mm-hmm. So it's visible object that is one of the eight indivisible rupas. No difference.
It has to be the eight, right? Not just color itself. It needs to be with the four primary as well.
So what is color?
One of the eight.
Is there color seen now?
Color can be seen.
You can just say what is seen. The visible object.
Okay.
Yeah. So the visible object is one of the rupas in each group of rupas.
It should be the group of rupas, not color itself, right? Not single color. So what is the color? I actually have confused. color is the rupa. And it.
What do you call that which is seen?
The visible object.
All right. What yes. else?
Just visible object. Just seen, right?
What else?
And
what is seen? What do you see here?
A color. Seen is color.
It doesn't matter what you call it. Now, that which is seen, this is a point. Not to think about it in different terms. Just that. The reality, the characteristic of a reality which can be seen, now appears to see. Whatever appears to see, no matter you call it what.
To seeing?
No, just hidden by thinking.
Just thinking about it. So it's not what appears. And even if you mention color, maybe you have an idea of different colors. So it's just the visible object, the same visible object that is a rupa in each group of rupas.
That's why in order to understand reality, understanding that which appears. Yeah, it's real. It's a reality. It cannot be anything, only that which can be seen. This is the way to be detached from taking it for something permanent.
They are just two different terms for the same thing, color and visible object. A different context, because when it's one of the eight indivisibles, in the list of rupas, there's one called color. But when we are talking about the object of seeing consciousness, we call it visible object, but it's one and the same reality. Just like there are different terms for panya and for effort and so forth.
Because we are talking about the eight unseparate rupa, right? In the list, we have the color. And the color in this list has the characteristic same as the visible object that we just seen?
No, different.
It's exactly the same rupa. We can say it's visible object in that group of in each group of rupas. Exactly the same. Because
it's
so just one rupa. Yeah.
It's a group of the rupa, not just okay.
It doesn't matter because we know every rupa arises in a group. So when visible objects seen now behind the scenes, it's the group, it arises with a group, but it's still just that reality, that characteristic of realities that is seen. So it, when it's odor that is experienced, and the odor is the reality, behind the scenes are the four primary rupas. And also three other rupas, including visible object, must be there in the group. Not anything different.
Is color different from visible object?
No.
Right.
Why are you unsure?
I'm a little bit unsure because every rupa, including the color itself, let's say flavor itself, is also include the color there, include the color there, but that rupa not experiencing by the tongue experiencing the flavor, then.
Exactly, just like now when visible object is seen, the flavor, the taste is not experienced, and the hardness is not experienced. But if the hardness was not there, then there couldn't be the visible object seen now. So exactly the same. And it's just a translation term, color, the Pali word. It's exactly the same, the rupa in the group of rupas and the what is seen now. The rupa is just the same.
See, it looks like very simple, but there must be certain understanding better and better. Otherwise, there is no way to eradicate or have less attachment to that which is seen. But when there is more understanding, it's only there.
I'd like to go back to the topic of study and practice, yeah? Pariyatti and Patipatti.
May I say pariyatti, or understanding, intellectual understanding, and direct understanding?
No. It's what I'd like to ask, because original question was how study or pariyatti helps to have a better result in Patipatti. So you are saying that there is a positive co-relationship between study and practice, yeah? But Sarah is talking that pariyatti just doesn't mean just study. It means study with right understanding, yeah? With may not be a good term. Then pariyatti, in that sense, is not pariyatti. It's more like a patipatti, isn't it?
Because when the word study is used by the Buddha, it doesn't mean like study like we think of it, study in school or study the book on science. It means with understanding. So if it's not with understanding, it cannot be pariyatti. But like now when we're talking about the nature of what is seen, the visible object, this is pariyatti understanding, because it's not the direct understanding of visible object. It's still the intellectual understanding. But there has to be understanding, otherwise it's not pariyatti. It's just like science study or any other study. Like if we just learn the details from the book, this is not pariyatti. This is just like ordinary conventional study. So this is not what is meant by study or pariyatti understanding. And that's why it can never just learning the Pali as we discussed the other day, or just memorizing the details, can never lead to patipatti or direct understanding, because there's no understanding there in the beginning. So it has to be a study with understanding.
You'd agree that the Buddha emphasized that it's necessary to hear the Dhamma and consider it before there can be direct understanding. So that hearing and considering has to be correct. It can't be just idle curiosity, for example, and it can't be just to memorize the contents. It has to be hearing and considering it as it relates to the present moment. There can be a degree of understanding, which we call intellectual understanding, before there is actual direct understanding of the characteristic of a present reality. And there has to be that intellectual understanding before direct understanding can arise.
No, the point I'd like to clarify is that study, when we think about study, it's just a pure study. But you are talking that is not a real study. Study means study with panya, with understanding. So my point is that it's not really study. It's already a patipatti practice.
I would forget about the word study, because it has too many connotations of deliberate effort and trying to acquire theoretical knowledge. Pariyatti doesn't translate as study. It is usually translated as intellectual understanding. What is the what is the Pali term for study, as a Pali expert?
It's pariyatti.
Or sikha.
Sikha is okay.
But But why not think of it as intellectual understanding instead of thinking of it as study? Because there doesn't have to be any actual study. It can be just from hearing and discussing like this moment.
Okay, intellectual understanding is okay. If you like prefer the word, yeah, intellectual understanding is okay. The point I'd like to make is that intellectual understanding here doesn't mean pure intellectual understanding. It's understanding with Panya, is what you are saying. And what I'm trying to say that, if you say so, it's not a intellectual development of intellectual understanding. It's already there's a elements of practice.
It's just a intellectual understanding is just a translation of pariyatti. Mm. So the difference between pariyatti and patipatti, which is translated as direct understanding, is when it's intellectual understanding, it's not yet the direct understanding. So this is why this morning Ajahn was mentioning about Satchanyana and Kichanyana. If it's not the very firm intellectual understanding, the Satchanyana, then it cannot condition the Kichanyana, which is also Patipatti or Satipatthana, the direct understanding. So there has to be a difference. And if we talk about study or Sika, and you say it's very broad, but who is the Sika, the one who has studied, the Aryan disciple? So the understanding of the Aryan disciple is the direct understanding of Dharmas as anatta and the first stage of enlightenment. So it's not just book study or anything like conventional study at all. So all these words as used by the Buddha, pariyatti and sika, is quite different from conventional intellectual understanding or scientific study or any study or book knowledge study. And this is why we keep stressing again and again, it's not just looking at the details or learning the books or memorizing the Pali.
What about the four factors for development of understanding mentioned by the Buddha? Association with the right person, hearing the true Dhamma, manasikara, consideration, and then practice in accordance with the Dhamma. So only the fourth one is direct understanding. Before that, there has to be considering correctly, and that will be with Panya. Panya can arise even before there is direct understanding of the characteristic of a present moment reality.
So now you understand what's meant by listen carefully. Because there should be the understanding of each word of the Buddha. Because the word of Buddha is different from the other's word completely. Even one word should be studied carefully. For example, what is study? See, we just talk about study, intellectual or directly, but what is study? What is meant by study? We go to school, study, what does it mean? To understand what is taught, right? Or understand different things, not that which is taught. See? So, study means to understand. Study the words of the Buddha, because do you think that you can understand the word of the Buddha without study? Impossible. That's why study means the understanding that which is taught. No matter in what school, university, faculty, understanding that which is taught, right? And what Buddha taught is not just the word like ABCD, but now what appears, he taught the truth about this that nobody can teach at all. Because it's not in the book, but it's now at this very moment that is seeing who knows the truth of it. So Buddha taught the truth in details, And it's the beginning of understanding that which is not understood at all, or by the other's word. So each word is the study, the words of the Buddha, which is the word of right understanding. No matter where you go to study, study that which is taught. So now Buddha taught us about whatever appears to understand its nature as no self, no one at all. We don't need any book, because if you read without understanding, it's useless. Pariyati, patipati, pativeta, satyayana, kijayana, katayana, of what? What about now? So each word of the Buddha's teachings is about now, to understand that which appears little by little, to understand reality as no one, no self at all. So all the way from hearing onto the direct awareness and realization, all about understanding that which appears. For now, everyone that is seeing now, but what? How much understanding is there about seeing? Even he taught a lot about the four primary rupas and the chakkhupasata rupa, which is different from other rupas, who can condition it. And this is study from hearing and considering, and it's not the moment of realization, the truth, with the understanding of anatta-ness completely, stage by stage. It is intellectual understanding. We call that, but it's just the understanding which is not direct understanding, that's all.
To me, study carefully doesn't mean so much, you know, because it's only those who understand the Dhamma study carefully, but those who do not understand Dhamma at all, they also study carefully.
And how can that person will study carefully later?
No, most of them, they never understand.
There must be the beginning. Yeah, beginning. Beginning and then developing on and on, little by little. This is the way, the only way.
That's why I think consider carefully is a better way of phrasing it rather than study, because the study is considering what one has heard and considering it as it relates to the present moment.
I think it has to do with past accumulation of wisdom. Those who have developed enough wisdom to see Dhamma as Dhamma, able to see Dhamma whenever they encounter a Dhamma. Yeah, without that kind of accumulation of right understanding, it's hard to see what is real teaching and what is not real teaching.
Everyone has developed a different level of understanding, so we can't say that this is only appropriate for people of a certain level of understanding. What we are talking about actually applies from beginning level up to very advanced level, because at every stage of the development of understanding, one has to hear and consider what is going to be directly understood on the next occasion of understanding. That's what we're talking about here.
Well, I cannot understand why so many people are attracted by so-called Samanak Vipassana method. They are obsessed with the method there, which means that their accumulation of wisdom is very limited, you know.
Well, there may be accumulation of wisdom, but there's also accumulation of wrong view. We can't say. And maybe they haven't heard a different explanation. They've only heard the Samyak Vipassana teaching. And it's difficult even for a person who has developed right understanding, if they have never heard the true Dhamma in this lifetime and only heard something else, difficult for them.
And I don't think it's difficult to understand, because the clinging to results, clinging to oneself, is so strong. So before people heard about the Dhamma, there's a lot of attachment to oneself, to what is eaten, what is seen, what is smelled, what is experienced, and then they hear about Buddhism, and there's still a lot of clinging to oneself. So now it's clinging to results, clinging to having more understanding, clinging to shortcuts. It's still all because of the wrong understanding of self. So looking for a practice or a way to get the results one's heard about. I don't think it's difficult to understand. It's human nature wanting to get results. No patience, no understanding of dhammas as anatta.
Constantine, in Japan, I've learned that in Japan, the Vipassana method is so popular. And the head of Sri Lanka monk, who is the head of Japan Theravada Association, has his own temple advocating this Vipassana method. And also he has his own publishing house, so he can write any book in English, and all his disciples translate them in Japanese. So he is very popular, and people only hear his teaching and believe that that is real teaching of Theravada.
All over the world. Not only in Japan, in Thailand, too. Everywhere.
Just want to ask a
question which relates to Sika and Seka. This is about Kalyanamita. We usually say the good friend, the Kalyanamita. Actually, the real good friend is the Buddha. So when, like Jonathan was mentioning, these four conditions and association with the wise person, actually with the Buddha and the Buddha's teachings, and it's good to consider, because otherwise one thinks of individual people and forgets that the really good friend is the Buddha. And when we talk about the good friend is whole of the holy life, I think it means referring to the Buddha and his wisdom. But in the Mulaparyaya Sutta, it talks about the Kalyanamita even as the worldling that is Seka. Usually Seka refers to Aryan disciples, but here it talks about even the worldling that is Seka, that is the Kalyanamita. So it seems sometimes the Kalyanamita is really referring to the Buddha as the really good friend, but sometimes
the highest one.
But actually it can be whenever there is association with anyone that teaches the truth. And in that sense, even the worldling can be the Seka or the Kalyanamita. Is that correct?
Do we have enemy or friend? What's meant by enemy or friend?
Well,
So Kalyanamita is right words. Yeah.
So we can say in this way, it's the right words, which are actually the Buddha's. If it's the right words, it's the Buddha's words, no matter who speaks them. And it's good to appreciate, otherwise people may have a lot of attachment to this person or that person, or hearing this word from this one or that one. But actually, when it's the hearing of the right words, it is Kalyanamita at that moment. And the real Kalyanamita is the
Buddha. Because you see that
Buddha.
Even you have the wrong teacher, but you can understand the word of the teaching. The word of the teaching is Kalyanamita, not the teacher.
But encountering Kalyanamita depends to a large extent to our own vipaka. Yeah.
And your own accumulation too.
In my personal case, it's Alan, Kun Alan, whom I met in Indonesia. Without his help, I would never understand Dhamma as Dhamma.
But still, what is the real friend, Kalyanamita?
So actually, because if we think in terms of a
person like Alan or Sujin or anyone, then it can be conditioned for a lot of clinging. But when one considers, actually it's the right words, and the right words as spoken by the Buddha that is heard. And I think that's a very good example, that even when it is the wrong teacher, or the teacher teaching the wrong thing, if at that moment there's appreciating the right words, it can be Kalyanamita. So it's very subtle. The meaning of Kalyanamita is very, very subtle. And it can be any time unexpectedly, because otherwise if one clings to just this person or that person or just hearing from this one or that one, then there can be the missing out on hearing the right words at different times, in different ways, from different people or sources quite unexpectedly.
And you cannot understand what's right and what's wrong words. But when you know that the Kalyanamita comes from understanding, and the right word which will bring understanding is Kalyanamita, no matter who speaks.
So why in particular in the
sutta do they mention the Kalyanamita as a worldling, as Sekha, because it can be the right words from anyone?
Because they are Aryan. Those Aryan.
Mm. But here it says actually Sekha. Worldling, that is Sekha. So
even
it's another
so,
meaning
even
of Sekha.
So, for Putuchna, there are two kinds.
Yes.
Antapala Putuchna and Kalyana
Putuchna. So this is a yeah. Kalyana Putuchna. Uh-huh. So it makes it sound like it is a person, but we always have to remember that there are just dhammas, that's the point. Otherwise, immediately there's the idea of hearing from this person or that person, but actually it's just the right considering, the right understanding at that moment.
The understanding of what appears now, what is appearing now. For example, now we talk about dosa. For example, and it seems like I understand what he said, but dosa doesn't appear right now to with me. So that kind of understanding is right understanding or not, or just when dosa appear
is dosa now. So why are you interested in understanding dosa?
Just given the symbol.
Sorry?
I just given a symbol for example, it's when we have a discussion or when I'm reading or when I read a book about some characteristic of a reality, but it doesn't appear right now. But it seemed I can understand what I read, I can understand what I heard.
About it, the story about dosa. But it's not actually the understanding of dosa, it's just the story of dosa that you're reading about in the book.
Because dosa doesn't appear.
Right. And why would you like to know about dosa?
No, any reality is just... I just give an example.
The point is that there can't be any direct understanding of something that is not appearing, obviously. If dosa is not arising, it can't be appearing, it can't be understood. So one can only think about dosa as one reads the description.
When we have a discussion here, so we may discuss about many topics, but doesn't appear right now.
Some of them are things that are maybe appearing now and some are not. That's why we try to come back to seeing and visible object and hearing and sound, things that are appearing now because they are generally more valuable, more worthwhile discussing than things that aren't appearing, especially things that never appear. Because there are a lot of dhammas that don't appear in daily life. Right? A lot of mental factors that don't appear, like contact and, stuff. Just because we know some reality is arising now doesn't mean it's actually appearing and can be known by its characteristic.
As long as there's not enough understanding of the word dhamma, you think about many things. But if you know that all realities are what we call Dhamma. They are real. So dosa is real at the moment when it arises, that's all. Not you. Because you understand that whatever arises is Dhamma. So there is still you who listen about dosa. So you have thought about dosa. But if there is very firm confidence of Dhamma at that moment, there can be the understanding of that characteristic as a reality, which is conditioned.
Even dosa doesn't appear.
Now what appears? The understanding of Dhamma is not enough. So you think about dosa. But dosa is a Dhamma, like seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting. So the understanding of Dhamma is not firm enough.
Usually people
hear
about
dosa and regret. I ask why you, because often you ask about dosa or regret, and the reason people want to hear about these dhammas is because it's unpleasant. No one likes it, so they would like to have less dosa. So actually they think they're interested to hear about dhammas, but they're thinking about how they can have, how it can be understood so there is less dosa or less regret or less unpleasant feeling in life. They're not usually concerned to ask about attachment and pleasant feeling and how to have less pleasant feeling. So actually dosa is just like punya, it's just a passing dharma of no consequence because it doesn't belong to you or Gung or me or anyone. It's just a passing dharma. If it arises, it arises and is gone instantly. The same with panya, nothing to be excited about or attached to or be concerned about. So whether it's panya now or dosa now is of no consequence. I don't think about, oh, I hope there is panya next and not dosa or something like that, because whatever the conditions for it arises and it's gone away immediately.
Just a reality. Like other realities, that's all.
So, the understanding, just understand what is appearing right now. But if it doesn't appear, for example, we talk about Favanga.
About what?
Favanga, Chitta.
Favanga.
For example, when we talk about Favangajitta, it seems like, I don't understand.
Yeah. So begin with, what is Favanga? Anytime you'd like to understand anything, just what is it? And when you know what is it, you understand better and better by the explanation about it.
And like on the other day, the reason we talk about, for example, the different conditions or about Favangajitas, is to understand how life is. Otherwise people may think when they're fast asleep there is nothing, or that somehow self can be an influence to condition realities. But it's a way to understand that dhammas really are anatta.
So what is Pavanga?
The citta is the result of the past karma.
Is seeing Pavanga? Because seeing is also the result of...
No.
So what is Pavanga?
It is a function of keep the life going.
Is there Pavanga now?
Yes, sure, but it doesn't appear. But it seems I can understand Pavanga
so
when I listen to you.
Can appear in life?
Appear in life? It's a visible object, sound?
Not all realities.
Yes, sure.
Only some of them.
Yes, sure.
Even there are Pavangas in between seeing and hearing. No one knows. Only Panya can know.
So even in theoretical understanding, I cannot say that I understand anything about Pavanga.
What's the purpose of understanding? What's the use of understanding?
And understand the nature of reality.
But it's a benefit.
Detached from the clinging.
Developing self. Right understanding of no self.
Yeah. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
podcast.
Talking about or studying about Bhavanga-cittas isn't to try and understand it or try to know Bhavanga-cittas now. That's not the purpose. That would be the wrong purpose. The opposite of Satika Sampajanya.
It's just for the sake of
understanding, appreciating that this is what life is, just different cittas, different kinds, different names, each one anatta.
So, Sarah, could you repeat, what is the right approach to understand Bhavanga?
So the wrong
approach of studying Bhavanga would be to try and know Bhavanga-citta at this moment, or try to catch it, or try to experience it, because that would be wrong practice at this moment. So the right approach is to appreciate how life is just made up of these different cittas. So there must be citta at each moment. So even in deep sleep, there must be cittas arising, performing their function. This is the nature of life, to really appreciate that actually no self there at all. Otherwise, some people might think there's a hidden store or a soul that continues at night time or in between processes, because the idea of self is so deeply embedded, and one finds one way or another all the time to reintroduce an idea of self or soul or I can do or I can catch, or you know, that's why one has to be so honest. Why would one like to know about dosa, for example? This is the truthfulness. Or why would one like to know about Bhavanga-citta? But the right purpose is just to understand there are these different dharmas, each one arising by different causes, different conditions. Really no one there at all.
Okay, thank you.
And another aspect of Bhavanga is, as it's described in the text, that there is Bhavanga all the time from the moment of rebirth until the moment of death, except when interrupted by sense door or mind door experiences. So Bhavanga underlies the whole of the life. Bhavanga is the life in that respect.
Citta is born, citta dies, citta is the good friend, citta is the bad friend, citta with understanding, citta without understanding. Really no one there at any moment from beginning to end.
Several moments ago, somebody is mentioning about the simile of wearing of a knife handle, which shows that practice or development of satipanya takes a long, long time,
And happens imperceptibly.
Yeah. But I can apply the same kind of thinking to our study, because we listen and we read and we somehow apply ourselves to sort of what is described in the scripture. Yeah? When one continues that kind of life, one can see after 10 years, after 20 years, one would see that one has very different attitude towards the life. Because in ordinary world, people are only concerned with making money, in a sense, and be happy. That's it. That's very much their purpose. It surprised me that most of my Facebook friends are only concerned with these things. What is concerned with me is development of detachment. And here I can see that even a small amount of sort of listening or study, it eventually leads to a totally different ideas. And hopefully, that kind of attitude may lead to a better understanding of realities. Can you see what? Is that what I'm trying to say?
Yes. Can we develop the detachment?
Yeah.
I think it's wrong to think that because I'm not interested in making money and I'm interested in studying more, that this is the development of right understanding. There is nothing incompatible about being interested in making money and also developing understanding of present moment realities. And similarly, just because one is devoting one's life to study and one that doesn't care so much about making money doesn't mean that right understanding is being developed. So I think we just should pay more attention to to the fact that it's all about understanding the present moment realities that are appearing rather than anything else, rather than changing our lifestyle or leading this kind of life or that kind of life.
Development of detachment. So can you explain how come we can
he also spoke about applying himself to the study of the Dhamma or the development of the Dhamma. How does one apply oneself to that? Same question, I think, as Hung's.
What's your question?
You mentioned applying yourself to the development of understanding.
Yeah.
How does one apply oneself to that?
Basically, listen to, Dhamma. In my case, it's listen to Kunsuchin's tapes. It's my way of developing or understanding.
At moment of listening, is there any applying oneself?
Not all the time. Yeah, I'm there.
What is the truth?
Truth about what?
Now.
No realities.
No one at all. But right understanding is not enough. So there is always I, all the time. But by hearing about no self and learn to understand better and better, it will condition the moment of understanding reality as not self, little by little. That's the way to be detached.
So I'm not trying to develop detachment. Detachment is a result of understanding. Yeah,
it's what about just detach just a little bit at a time from idea of self and not understanding whatever appears. See, the point is understanding whatever appears.
I want to reintroduce
the topic of Hung's that she brought up at the foundation on Saturday, and I think that some of us said something that was not correct. She was talking about Aramana Dipati Pachya and Aramana Upanisya Pachya, and she gave the example at the beginning talking about Aramana Dipati Pachya, about really liking someone's scarf and liking it so much and wishing to have it. And we were saying that it's an example of Aramana Dipati Pachya, the colour that one likes so much that one would like to possess, or the texture. And there was a discussion about whether it could be just the concept, the idea of the scarf that one keeps thinking about and dreaming about. Like people also talked about the mango, the taste that one likes so much that one's obsessed by, or the visible object, or just the idea of the mango. So it seems that it can be the very strong condition, but actually we know that panyati can only be a condition just by aramana, like liking the pattern of the tablecloth. It's the object of thinking at that moment. But in order to be aramana adipati pachya, it has to be either the desirable rupas or certain cittas, but not cittas with dosa or moha, for example, or citta seekers, but not dosa or issa or these ones. But it cannot be a concept that is the condition for citta and citta seekers by way of Aramana Adhipati Pachya or by Aramana Upanisya Pachya. So I think there was some comments that some of us made that were not correct, because actually it cannot be the concept of the scarf or the idea of the scarf that's conditioned, only the reality, the visible object or the softness, for example. And in the Patana they give some examples of Aramana Adhipati Pachya, for example, wrong view, like there can be a wrong view that can be the Aramana Adhipati Pachya for Lobha. So I thought that it must mean the, like for the example, the idea that I can control life, that one it strongly believes, but actually it must be, because if it's the reality, it must be the ditti itself, not the story, the idea I can control life. And another example they give for kusala is, for example, one has performed some great merit and one thinks about the good deed, but again it must be the kusala citta itself that is the Aramana Adhipati Pachya for the kusala citta or the lobha that is conditioned. Do you have any comments? Is this correct?
We can change the word, but we cannot change what we accumulate to like or dislike, whatever appears. If I don't call it scarf, but I say like that, see? Mango, see, we don't call it mango, because it can be called mamong. But the test is there as the Aramana Adhipati for some
person. But I think the point was, because on Saturday some people were saying it can be just the concept, just the idea, no matter whether you call it mango or mamung or anything else. But according to the Patana, actually it has to be reality only, so it has to be either the rupa,
no matter what you call it,
whatever it's called, it has to be the rupa itself. So we can say in general, oh, it's to the mango, but actually to be specific by this condition,
taste,
it has to be the actual taste or the color, not just the idea of mango. So if we're accurate, it has to either be the rupa, the citta or cetasika. And the same with wrong views. We say, oh, attached to one's idea about God, but actually it's the ditti itself that has to be the pachya. It cannot be the concept, because the concept's not real. Anything else you'd like to... Because there was some confusion after.
Yeah, I agree. Because, for example, when we say someone attached to a car, for example, a car, it's not about the... not about the idea or concept of a car, but maybe the comfort or the color or the comfort, or maybe also the mana when one's sitting at a beautiful car, for example. So it's not about the concept. I agree, it's about the reality. Yeah, one which can be the condition for the rising of lobha or kusala.
So we can say in shorthand that there's strong attachment by this condition to the mango or the car, but to be specific, it has to be to the actual desirable rupa.
Yes.
And also, because we were talking about Adhipati Pachya, predominance condition, how there are two kinds. So one kind is the Sahajata Adhipati Pachya, which refers to those four factors which may predominate, like Chanda, Virya, Panya or Citta. And then this one, Aramana Adhipati Pachya, is quite different, because it's referring to those desirable rupas or Citta or Cetasika that may condition Citta or Cetasikas now.
And then you forget.
Mm-hmm. If it's not really understood, one forgets. So when it's clearer, then it's becomes...
And the understanding should be the moment when it's there. But you don't have to name it or call it, but it's there, that characteristic, which is so desirable. Just to understand whatever appears, that's all. No matter how much we learn about.
And I think there was still a little bit of
misunderstanding about the distinction between Aramana Dipati Pachya and Aramana Upanisya Pachya, because the Pachya itself, the conditioning Dharma, and the Pachyupana, the conditioned Dharmas, are exactly the same. So whether we're talking about Aramana Dipati Pachya or Aramana Upanisya Pachya, it can be the desirable rupas or the cittas or cetasikas which condition the attachment, or the kusala cittas. So in terms of the distinction we talked about in the case, like the attachment to the taste of the mango, the object that is so desirable that one likes it so much, and then when it's aramana upanisya pachya, it is the accumulation of that liking that is stressed. So it's just a difference in emphasis, but actually the same dharmas.
When we talk about atipati as aramana, it's just about that which is experienced by that which has been accumulated to like so much. So what is your aramana atipati today?
It's the taste of the veggie.
See? Yeah. And it would be your upanisya, just like that. Like many people would like to have just vegetable. See, that is aramana upanisya pachya. Taste, see, no matter what it's called, vegetable or not, but the accumulation of aramana upanisya is for that. Tomorrow, would you like to have that again?
I think yes.
So that is the aramana atipati and the amaramana upanisya.
So want to have it again and again. So
because it has been
accumulated
to like such and such thing.
Yes. So the difference is for the aramana atipati pachaya, so it maybe can be the
just
first
about
time you attach
no,
to.
No, just about the object, because it is aramana atipati, desirable object.
Okay.
Until it becomes one's habit.
So it becomes the
to desire for such certain object, which is aramana atipati.
So whether it's the first time
tasting that vegetable, or the millionth time when it's the one that is highly desirable that one likes so much, is aramana atipati pachya. But when the tendency is accumulated, it is aramana upanisya pachya. It becomes the habit to like it again and again.
Yes.
Daily life. Yeah. So we learn to understand the moment when we just want it very much, because that is aramana atipati from the aramana upanisya, which has been accumulated to just want such like that again.
For example, today I like the veggie very much, but maybe tomorrow I don't like it anymore.
No, so. I don't think so. You ask for it again.
So yeah. It can be like
that, coffee,
right?
Like every morning, see, or whatever.
Okay. Or maybe there's a liking
very much to coffee or Kanom, but one knows it's not good to drink so much, so one may say no tomorrow. But actually that liking tendency
is still there.
Okay. But just one says no because it's not
because there are many other choices. And
until the new aramana upanisya is there from the other aramana atipati. That's why we like not only one thing. No one. Always coming back to no one. Only reality. From nothing, and then something, and then nothing, until it's very deep down there in your understanding that life is just that. Never to return. Yesterday was yesterday, and now will be yesterday of tomorrow. all gone, and now it's gone from moment to moment. So we don't mind what life will be at all, here or there, yeah, this world or other world, no one there. And this is the beginning of have less and less clinging, little by little. Understanding actually there's nothing if there's no conditions for anything to arise at all. But no one can stop conditions for the arising of Dhamma. No one can stop citta to arise. And no one cannot stop its falling away at all. Very temporarily. Last life, who knows who are who? Who was who last life and who are who this life? The same as next life. No idea about whether I have met you before. Last life. Because you cannot be this personality when it was last life. Kunjara, if someone gives you thousand and thousand million and asks you not to study Dhamma, not to listen to the teachings, is it okay?
No. I can live only 10 years or 10 or so years. Several million dollars doesn't mean anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's why among the conditioned realities, right understanding is the best of all. Thinking about eons and eons ago, the circle of birth and life, not understanding whatever appears. And having opportunity to hear, to begin to understand.
In Dhammapada, there is one gatha which said that aneka jati sansara. Sansara consists of countless birth and death. Sangaha kala gave santo. While I'm seeking to find out the house builder, and then it says dukkho jati punam punam. It is just birth and death. It's again and again, it's suffering. In what sense does he say it's suffering? I do not quite understand the meaning of suffering.
Because we don't understand samsara as now.
Yeah.
We think about birth and death.
Yeah.
But each moment is samsara.
Yeah.
If one is missing, there is no samsara. So each moment of life is samsara. Never come back. Changing all the time. So what's the use of that which is conditioned to arise and pass away instantly all the time? No one there. And this will bring little and little understanding until it appears as it is to Panya of that degree. Because even few words from Tipitaka, like it appears well, see, what is meant by well? Without Panya, it's not well. Only with Panya, because now hardness does not appear as just a reality at all. We just have no idea about it arises and falls away. Otherwise, there cannot be that which appear. Even few words, but more and more, again and again, can condition more understanding.
Thing, like we're talking about visible object now, because the object doesn't appear well now, that's why there's doubt and wondering and sometimes no confidence or confusion or thinking of other objects because it doesn't appear well. So that's the difference between pariyatti understanding and patipatti understanding. When it's patipatti understanding, the object appears well.
But the Veda, see, different degrees of well.
Another topic that came up
yesterday evening, and I have a question related to it. We were talking about rupas, and we were talking about gross and subtle rupas, and we were talking also about rupas that are far and near, for example, the visible object or the sound of far objects, but the tangible object is close, it's near. My question is about impingement, because like we were talking earlier about visible object impinging on eye sense, and the Pali word is sapatiga, meaning striking against. This is a literal meaning, so we talk about it striking against or impinging. But I think impinging really refers to how the visible object arises in the vicinity of eye sense, so that seeing can experience it, because it doesn't actually, literally speaking, impinge or contact. It just means it arises and falls away close enough to the eye sense so that seeing can see it, whereas the tangible object actually touches against, so it directly impinges. So can we say that in this sense, impinges just means arises or falls away in proximity of the sense base, so the sense consciousness experiences it?
I think that there are so many places talking about near and far away. It depends on the context. For example, seeing in this world, seeing is seeing for sure, but is it different, the human being and the divine, or the heaven, angel, so forth? See? So many aspects, yes. Yeah.
So yes, different contexts, far near, has different meanings, and depending on understanding and many, many factors. And the impinging, the sapatiga, the striking against, because I read in one of the commentaries that actually it just means the object arises and falls away in the vicinity, and this is actually what is meant by impinging.
What is far?
Depending on
seeing and hearing.
Yes.
Because if it's
cannot be so close.
Touch, they cannot be seen.
And so when it refers to impinging, and it, sometimes it says impinging is striking against, but actually one has to understand what is meant, because it isn't physically striking against, it's just arising and falling away in such a place that it can be experienced by seeing. Yes.
It has to impinge, but it's far away.
Yeah. Even a word like impinge, one has to consider carefully what it's meant. Yeah.
Yeah.
The subtlety of Dhamma.
Can you say again? Impinge, but it's far away, so I can.
Like you see the moon. The moon doesn't touch.
The visible object is nowhere near the eye sense. So when we say it impinges, it doesn't mean the visible object actually touches the eye sense, whereas the tangible object touches the body sense, it's near, but the visible object of sound is far, far away, so it's the far object. So when we say the sound impinges on the ear sense, it's just a way of speaking. It means that there is the hearing of that sound, which is at the right distance to be heard. So a word like impinging has it's a particular meaning, not like English meaning.
Yes.
Even the eight inseparable rupas see different impinge. So how can there be anyone? Okay, it is now building up the understanding of no self.
Let me ask Gunjita a question. So what
is the most useful aspect of studying the Dhamma, Gunjita?
Of the Dhamma? Have a right understanding.
Right understanding of what?
Of the reality.
What for?
So just get rid of the akusala that we have.
Back to that very first comment you made about what's behind visible object. I've been dwelling on that. So in fact, this hardness arises with visible objects.
Certainly.
That's amazing. Yes.
In the visible rupa.
I never thought of
it. Otherwise, you cannot get rid of the clinging. If you know each one in details, you know that they cannot be taken for self or anything permanent.
Right. No, no, sound is not, sound's not one of the eight indivisible rupas. Sound is, would be number nine. Mm-hmm. So it's colour, the four primaries and colour. I think of it as colour, smell, taste, and then nutrient essence. So it's easy to remember these three.
Ignorance is there any time when it experiences.
All the time.
Almost. That's why we have to understand that. The seeing doesn't have ignorance with it. Only seven jetasikas can condition seeing because of karma. So we can see the power, the strength of karma from here to there. No one take you, condition only.
I have a question about the tilakkhana, three characteristics of realities, that is impermanent, suffering and non-self, yeah? But somehow you seem to place so much emphasis on non-self.
Because all sankhara, sabbe sankhara, anicca, sabbe sankhara, dukkha, all dhammas are anatta.
If there is no understanding of dhamma, for example, visible object now, as just Dhamma, not something or someone. If there's not that clear understanding of Dhamma, how can there be the understanding of the arising and falling away of Dhamma? And if there's no understanding of the arising and falling away of Dhamma, how can there be the understanding of the unsatisfactoriness of the Dhamma? So there has to be the beginning of understanding Dhamma as anatta right from the start in order to understand it as Dhamma. Otherwise, impossible to have the higher stages of understanding of the arising and falling away of that Dhamma. So this is why anatta has to be really stressed from the beginning.
It's so common, like sound. It arises and it falls away, but no one knows about the actual arising and falling away. So it's not the realization of tukkhang, anicchang, anatta.
So when people who follow
Vipassana or other practices, they think they understand something about the impermanence of dharmas, but actually they don't understand anything about dharmas, otherwise they wouldn't follow the practice. So if nothing is understood about Dhamma as anatta, if there's still an idea of practice, impossible to understand anything about impermanence of Dhammas.
Probably they have very strong attachment to self and very strong attachment to results.
That's why right understanding will bring the understanding of no one, nothing, never return. Okay.